Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Data this and data that. Seems modern life is all about data and how fast you can get it. AT&T said today, it's going to slow your data down.
From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Friday, the 2nd of March. The second biggest wireless carrier in the country, AT&T, told us this morning that even though we keep using that word, unlimited doesn't really mean what we think it means. To get you up to speed, if I might, AT&T originally offered pretty nice unlimited data plans to sign up new subscribers back when iPhones were the new thing. And then when huge data loads started clogging up the cellular network long about 2010 or so, they stopped. So the company's been trying to push subscribers into plans where they pay more if they download more, and in the meanwhile, throttle the heaviest users who stick with unlimited. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman explains.
AT&T stopped offering new customers $30 a month unlimited data in 2010. They grandfathered in all the people who already had the plan, about one in five AT&T subscribers. Now, those people can still download all the video and music and web pages they want without paying more. But AT&T is going to deliver it way slower once you grab more than 3 gigabytes a month using the cell network. That works out to about 10 hours of streaming high-def movies. Let's say Harry Potter's first 4 years at Hogwarts.
The throttling is not a subtle thing.
Throttling is when the data stream is slowed to a trickle, says Carl Howe, technology analyst at the Yankee Group.
A download of a song that might have taken you 20 seconds then turns into 3 or 4 minutes.
An AT&T spokesman told me today that only 5% of all AT&T subscribers ever hit that 3-gigabyte threshold. He said it's just a few of the heaviest users who slow down data traffic for everyone else. And AT&T wants them to pay more when they use the cell network more, says Standard & Poor's equity analyst Todd Rosenbluth.
What AT&T would like to do is get existing customers that are on an unlimited plan to migrate to more of a tiered data package where they're paying for more of the data quality or the data services that they're going to use.
AT&T customers who don't want to get throttled can surf the web on Wi-Fi or switch to one of the carriers that still offer unlimited data plans. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The energy industry got its hands on a hot new number today, a fresh estimate of China's natural gas resources. Beijing says it has about 50% more natural gas than the United States does, all of it sitting there waiting to be tapped, most of it trapped in rock out in western China, and getting it out could change energy use in the world's second biggest economy. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Tro has the story.
Forget all the tea in China. The world's been waiting years to hear about all the natural gas. And now the Chinese government's put a number on it, 25 trillion cubic meters. Suffice to say, that's a lot. Maybe enough to power China for 200 years. Sam Jaffe with IDC Energy Insights says it's nice to have that on paper.
People were worried that it was all smoke and mirrors. We now have more confidence that it's not. However, it's still a ballpark number.
Because getting the gas out of the rock takes advanced technology, namely hydraulic fracturing, or fracking. Before you start drilling, it's hard to know exactly how much gas you can get to. But unlike U.S. producers, China won't face much regulatory pressure or public backlash.
You can't have a not-in-my-backyard approach to things when the government owns all the backyards.
China wants to burn all that gas itself. Right now, it pays to import most of its energy, but it'll take years to change that, says Jeff Stiles at GSW Strategy.
Even if they were able to produce it very significant quantities today, they don't yet have the infrastructure to use it.
China doesn't have much in the way of gas pipelines or refineries. It runs mostly on coal, and not just power plants. In rural areas, many Chinese burn coal directly for heat or cooking. Michael Zenker at Barclays Capital says China's natural gas boom isn't just about learning to frack. It's
how quickly they can add customers to the grid.
Looking at past Chinese development efforts, that answer is probably more quickly than you think. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
On Wall Street this Friday, bad day, good week. Details, numbers, when we get there. It's going to be a busy weekend for the Republican presidential candidates. 10 states vote next Tuesday, Ohio, Virginia, Massachusetts, and Tennessee among them. We've been to some of those states this week for our election coverage, the real economy, what actually is going to matter come this November. Today, we're going to start with a well-worn GOP applause line, repeal Obamacare. It's become a theme in the GOP primaries, but there is at least one group of Republican voters not cheering, those who find health reform good for business. Blake Farmer of WPLN reports from the healthcare hub of Nashville, Tennessee.
The healthcare sector drives the local economy. It employs more than 200,000 people. They represent wide-ranging political views, but it's an industry that has tended to align with the GOP, a party that uses Obamacare like a curse word. Entrepreneur Chris Redditch explains the conflict.
We don't need more rules and regulations, but at the same time, if these are rules and regulations, I'm figuring out a way to help ease the burden.
So I'm hearing you say you're not going to find Chris Redditch arguing on behalf of more regulation. If they exist, you'll find a way to make money off it.
Exactly. And isn't that what entrepreneurs are all about?
Okay. I'll hook you up, baby. I'll hook you up.
At a dialysis clinic downtown, a tech distracts her patient as she inserts an IV and gets blood flowing through the machine.
She's ready to go. 3 hours and 45.
As part of the 900-page Affordable Care Act, new rules increase penalties if techs, nurses, or even doctors see patients while their license is flagged in another state. Could be they committed Medicare fraud in Maine or just stopped paying student loans in Louisiana. Redditch's IT startup called Provider Trust offers what amounts to a nonstop background check, and business is booming.
We call it regulatory tailwinds that are really driving the growth of our company.
With 5,000 employees spread across 27 states, Nashville-based Dialysis Clinics, Inc. has reluctantly purchased the service. Compliance officer Peggy Williams says one tech slipping through the cracks could cost tens of thousands of dollars.
We're not going to fight it. We're going to figure out how to do it.
While Republican candidates are promising repeal of the Affordable Care Act, Williams doesn't see that happening, and she'd rather it not. The health care overhaul will provide near universal insurance coverage, which could be good for any company that currently treats patients who can't pay. Nashville-based hospital chains are some of the biggest potential winners.
Frankly, in our circles, nobody talks about repealing or wanting to repeal Obamacare.
Craig Becker is director of the Tennessee Hospital Association.
They want to see individual coverage. That's really been our Achilles heel.
Unpaid medical bills have cut into profits for the nation's largest investor-owned hospitals. HCA alone wrote off $1.3 billion in charity care last year. While hospital chain executives are often big Republican donors, Becker says they recognize the potential benefits.
Probably you have the personal feelings and then you have your professional feelings.
And whether healthcare CEOs feel warm and fuzzy about Obamacare or they're just holding their nose, industry strategist Molly Kate says they're all trying to figure out how to operate under the new law.
There will always be moaners, let's face it, but I think the majority of people have accepted it as a fact of being in the healthcare business.
Kate regularly surveys healthcare insiders. Her most recent poll shows they think the healthcare overhaul is unstoppable, no matter who is president. In Nashville, I'm Blake Farmer for Marketplace.
All right, so raise your hand if you know which state has the most delegates up for grabs come Super Tuesday. No ideas? All right, here's a hint. We're going to be in Atlanta, Georgia on Monday, where the economic story of the past 4 years says a whole lot about the politics of this election. Like it or not, it's Friday. Yeah, I know that's a silly thing to say, but it means we're going to take 4 live minutes on the radio right now, figure out what's been happening since Monday. Here for our weekly wrap of Wall Street and Beyond are Lizzie O'Leary from CNN in Washington, also our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore on the line. Hey, guys.
Hi. Hi, Kai.
All right, so we'll begin with you, Ms. O'Leary, since it's been a while since you've been here. And the op-ed pages of the Wall Street Journal today, Secretary of the Treasury Timothy Geithner writes, almost like he's saying, remember the Alamo. He says, remember the crisis when you think about financial reform. Does he actually think people have forgotten?
I think he is speaking to the very specific audience of the Wall Street Journal editorial page and the folks who read the journal as well for the news. What is going on right now, lest Americans forget? Congress passes a law, but then the most important part of that for the lobbying industry and all the industries watching the law, in this case Dodd-Frank, is the implementation phase.
Right.
So the big stuff isn't in place yet, and he's trying to kind of bang the drum while people are fine-tuning the regulatory parts of this act.
Did I read somewhere today that like something like 70% of deadlines have been missed for these regulatory implementations?
Yeah, and the big ones are just overwhelming when you look at, for example, just the comment letters that were sent in on the Volcker rule part of this law.
Right.
They're overwhelming. It's that they're spamming the SEC.
And so, Heidi, what does this mean in terms of actually getting anything done? I imagine it bodes ill.
It bodes ill for getting Dodd-Frank done, but we have other things to get done, like, for instance, enforcing the laws that we already have. And a lot of people would like to see more of that and see if that gets us somewhere as well. But, you know, I think that Geithner has a point in us forgetting things. The reason that, you know, we've all kind of been able to go about our business is that we don't worry anymore about banks falling apart. And maybe it's healthy to have a little fear about the stability of this system. And you've heard the Obama administration this week hitting that point time and time again. We're not secure about money market funds. We're not secure about bank short-term lending. They're trying to remind us that nothing has changed. And Dodd-Frank may be one of the things we can change, but even the things that are currently on the books aren't being enforced. So we have forgotten everything.
It was kind of interesting, Lizzie, just really quickly to wrap this up on the whole Geithner thing, how he kept invoking his wife, saying, you know, she answered all these phone calls from panicked bankers back in the day. And boy, I'll tell you, she hasn't forgotten.
Yeah. Beware Carol Geithner. Maybe she just wants to, I don't know, move back to New York. But this is not her first time making it into his press appearances either. They've got a strategy here.
That's too funny. Heidi, talk to me about Wall Street for a second. We've got the Dow at plus or minus 13,000. The NASDAQ at, holy cow, almost 3,000. Does that mean anything, or should we just move on and carry out the plan of the day?
Yeah, it's a new index I like to call the la 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 I can't hear you index. So the market is just going to do what the market's going to do. It would be great to read into it that the market is picking up on the very soft elements of a recovery we've been seeing.
Mm-hmm.
But what we know is that last year when everything was falling apart in Europe, market was still up.
Right.
So we should roll with it while we can.
All right, so we're gonna close our session this week by I guess this will be the third week in a row with a different rotating cast of. The question being, what don't we know that might, for the third year in a row, the third spring in a row, stop what looks to be a nascent recovery? Lizzie O'Leary?
Okay, this is the thing we know, so I'm breaking the rules.
Oh, man.
All right,
we're not going to have you back again. It's going to be another
month
and a half.
Long-term unemployment. We know it. It's there. It's been sitting there. And every time we get good job numbers, they tend to be recently hired people. It's that larger percentage of people who've been out of work for 6 months or more. And that's a drag. It's still a drag. And it cycles around. It affects housing, which affects everything else.
Yeah. All right. Heidi, quickly, what do you not like?
What we don't know is what we haven't known for 10,000 years of humanity, the future, especially on manufacturing.
So I guess I should stop asking this question. All right, good. The series is now finished as of today. Heidi Moore in New York for us. Lizzie O'Leary from CNN in Washington. Thanks, you guys. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kai.
All right, see ya. Coming up, a day without Google.
Okay, all right. I'm getting rid of my Gmail app. Google Maps right now, the Talk app because that uses GChat. Gosh, no, YouTube.
It's everywhere. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial slipped 2 points today, basically flat, closed at 12,977. The NASDAQ off 12 points, 0.4%, finished at 2976. The S&P 500 down 4 points, 0.3%, ended things at 1,369. For this topsy-turvy week, the Dow was down, but just less than 0.1%. The NASDAQ, though, picked up 0.4%. The S&P 500 added 0.3%. Investors gave Yelp rave reviews on its first day of trading. Shares of the popular website that rates local businesses zoomed up 64%. That's a 6 and a 4 next to each other. It's an especially big pop given that Yelp hasn't turned a profit since it was started 8 years ago. Another tech firm, Zynga, gained 1.4%. Today, Zynga said it's going to offer online games on its own site to reduce its dependence on social networks like Facebook. Bond prices, well, they rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.98%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. The Commerce Department reports on factory orders for January. National Sleep Awareness Week begins. According to the National Sleep Foundation, most adults need 7 to 9 hours of Z's a night. Can't sleep? Don't count sheep. Experts say that may be more distracting than relaxing. And on March 5th, 2002, we cozied up to the Osbournes when the family reality show premiered on MTV. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. This broadcast has been remarkably and mercifully Lin-sanity-free the past 3 weeks or so. The novelty of Jeremy Lin's unexpected rise to basketball stardom having long since worn off. But for commentator Christina Wong, his appeal continues to grow for reasons that really have very little to do with Lin's jump shot.
Yep. Almost a month later, I'm still Lin-sane. Time I should be spending stalking my ex on Facebook is now spent scarfing down every link I can find on Jeremy Lin. But the Linformation I'm most hungry for isn't his points per game. It's the details of Lin's life before the NBA. Like Lin, I'm in an atypical field for an Asian American. I'm a performance artist. If you don't know what a performance artist is, it's okay. Neither did my conservative third-generation Chinese American family. With slim income opportunities and exhausting workloads, I constantly wonder when I should quit. So I can't imagine it was easy for Jeremy Lin to pursue his dreams when there weren't many Asian American basketball stars as role models. Turns out what kept him believing in himself was the support of his family, his coaches, and his church. And that got me wondering, how many other Jeremy Lins are out there? Not just Harvard-educated NBA players who break records for most points scored in the first four starts, but people with the potential to excel at the unexpected who don't have a support system. People who are held back by stereotypes of what their race, background, or gender should and should not be able to achieve. Not just in sports, but in school, the workplace, the arts, anywhere. I think there are probably Jeremy Lins everywhere. Dry cleaners who want to write the next American novel, gay kids who dream of being president, immigrants who want to be the first in their family to go to college. The big Linspiration I hope we take from the Jeremy Lin story has nothing to do with basketball. It's that we open our eyes to the greatness that's lurking unnoticed in all of us. That, and hoping that everyone who stands in our way gets a groin injury.
Christina Wong is a writer and performer here in Los Angeles.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter.
Letters Today begins with my interview with behavioral economist Sendhil Mullainathan on Monday about why everybody notices changes in gas prices, but not many of us can say how much other things might run, say eggs or toothpaste. Glenna Dreyer from St. Louis is one who can.
My husband and I are firmly in the middle class, but I know what I pay for everything I buy, including toothpaste. The reason people notice gas prices is not only because they are posted everywhere, but because we have to buy it. I could opt out of junk food, but I have to put gas in my car to get to work or to get to the grocery store. We, as a nation, are over the proverbial barrel, literally.
Sally Herships filed a story for us the other day about Yelp. That had Byron Henderson writing from San Jose, California, and looking for a little bit more.
The story had lots of cutesy-poo references to the number of stars, but not a single mention of the astronomical price at which Yelp expects to offer its shares. Yelp is emblematic of companies like Facebook and Zynga whose strongest growth is behind them, yet are coming public at ridiculous multiples to sales and earnings.
And finally, an item not usually mentioned on the air, but easily our most commented upon content this week, our music on Wednesday in memory of the Monkees' Davy Jones. Tim Denens in Mount Laurel, New Jersey.
Not exactly a Pleasant Valley Friday, given the news that he's taken the last train to Clarksville. But that was then, this is now, and I can't believe you had to ask if we were paying attention. After all, I'm a believer.
Lots of good memories shared that day. Here's another one. As always, let us know what you think. Email works best. The website is marketplace.org. Click on the link that says contact. Kind of a weird show, but they did have good music, didn't they? Unless you've been completely offline for some reason this week, you might have heard that Google turned on its new privacy settings yesterday. The changes let the company combine the information it gathers on users across all of its services, Gmail, YouTube, search, the whole smash. We'll spare you the details other than to say it looks to be a simpler privacy policy with perhaps less privacy, unless you go completely Google-free. Marketplace Jennifer Collins logged off and lived to tell about it.
It is March 1st, Google D-Day. I'm in a no-Google zone for 24 hours. Today, my privacy is mine. This is going to hurt.
Okay, all right, I'm getting rid of my Gmail app, Google Maps right now, the Talk app because that uses GChat. Gosh, no, YouTube.
Goodbye, phone. Just arriving at work now. I'm supposed to be caught up on everything that's happened in the last 24 hours and be smart about what'll happen in the next 24. My morning prep is a Google minefield. I get no mercy from my editor.
When I started as a journalist, the internet barely existed.
How'd that work? I head for a search engine called DuckDuckGo.
We actually currently don't track our users.
Gabriel Weinberg is the founder. He says since Google announced its privacy policy, his traffic has more than doubled to a million searches a day. Google gets a billion. And Weinberg says lots of websites use Google's tools to track users, and many people don't know about it.
I would imagine anyone using the internet today, even if they don't go to any Google sites, still interact with Google.
There are, of course, do not track services, many of which Google has found ways around. I check out one of these sites, and what do you know? A video from YouTube pops up.
Welcome to the guided tour for Do Not Track Plus.
YouTube. I can't go there. It's owned by Google. You know what? I gotta get away from my computer.
I'm just gonna sign out.
At home, it's the first of the month and my bills are due. My roommates and I keep track of everything on a Google spreadsheet.
So, since I can't use Google, do you think you guys can wait a day on the rent?
Absolutely not. You have to use Google.
That's not happening. I need to get my mind off search. Oh, yeah. I've been wanting to watch this movie about an evil bank.
They control everything.
Okay, it's No Google, day two, March 2nd. I'm driving to work again. It's also Friday, and that means movies and parties and dancing. But I can't get into my Gmail to figure out what's happening. Okay, Google, you win. Just track me. Okay, moment of weakness. I sought guidance from Mark Rottenberg. He's the head of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. Is there a way to escape Google then?
Well, you could unplug your computer and open up a book.
And a map and a Zagat's. Oh, wait, that's owned by Google. And a dictionary. Yeah, never mind. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note of a Friday in early March, a chance to catch up on the news that didn't quite make the headlines, courtesy of Brendan Francis Noonan, Rico Galliano, and the rest of the Marketplace staff.
Jonathan Karp, senior editor. What story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
Virgin Atlantic Airlines has this new upper-class dream suite, big beds, and they're training flight attendants to whisper, to speak very calmly at 20 to 30 decibels.
Because it's like that's especially soothing or something?
That's what they say. They want to give their passengers the most comforting and relaxing experience possible.
But when they go through the curtain into coach, all bets are off, I guess.
Quiet in the back. They're sleeping up front.
You want fish or chicken?
Matt Berger, digital director for Marketplace. What story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
Well, taxi cab drivers in New York City this week announced that they're going to change the lights on the top of their cab, which let you know if they're available or not.
I've always found this confusing. I never remember whether their illumination means they're on duty or off duty.
Well, and it's even more confusing than that right now. There's actually four potential availabilities because they have multiple lights. So they're simplifying it to only have one light, and it's either on or off, available or not available.
I wish people had these signs. It would make life a little easier.
Or even if the taxi cabs came up with other signs, so like takes credit card, doesn't take credit card, or very angry, or likes to talk a lot.
Yeah, we'll take you to Brooklyn is not taking you to Brooklyn.
Exactly.
Jeremy Hobson, host of the Marketplace Morning Report. What story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
So there's this new website called funnyexam.com, which is sort of questions that would be on a test or an exam and really stupid answers that the students gave.
All right, some examples.
Okay, briefly explain what hard water is. Answer, ice. What is a vibration? I don't know if this is a physics class or something like that. Answer, there are good vibrations and bad vibrations. Good vibrations were discovered in the 1960s.
Baby boomers right now are going, what's wrong with that? A plus.
The radio show Rico and Brendan do is called The Dinner Party. There's a link to the podcast on our website, marketplace.org. And that is Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. Today, the Dow slipped 2 points, ending, flat. The NASDAQ off 12 points, 0.4%. The S&P 500 down 4 points, 0.3%. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's acting producer is Megan Larson. The executive producer of the broadcast is Deborah Clark. J.J. Yore is the vice president and general manager. Coming up this weekend on our personal finance show, we expect the president and the first family to present a certain image. An image like that, though, can be expensive for them.
There are very complicated rules governing who pays for what in the White House. The Obamas have to pay for a lot of stuff themselves, and the prices are at Ritz-Carlton levels.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourself a great weekend. We'll meet you back here on Monday. Actually, in Atlanta on Monday. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.